And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your host, Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. We're back, as always. What's done in the dark will be brought to the light, friends. We've been doing that for years now on the air. Many of us have been doing it in our own lives. This program is to bring you all together, so our impact is all the much greater. Today, I am honored to have two important guests, Deborah Golding, who's been on the show before. She's an activist and a counselor in America who've been working with survivors of the crimes of the Mormon Church, the Latter-day Saints, or LDS Church, and Ella Sturr. She's a journalist from Holland. We've also had Ella on the air before. Ella's going to be talking about evidence linking the Orsini crime family and the mafia with the Vatican, and one of the people who's been kind of a thorn in our side off and on, a guy called Sasha Stone, and a front group called the International Tribunal for Natural Justice, ITNJ, which was set up in 2015 as a distraction and counter to the work of our tribunal, ITCCS, the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State. Before I bring them both on, and we want to talk about this in the first part of the show, the breaking news that came out a few days ago that there is the first common law court ever being set up by the ITCCS in North America is going to convene in Vancouver on Monday, March 30th. There's a notice about this at murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates. Because for the last 16 months, a citizens grand jury based in Vancouver has documented the evidence of ongoing crimes against humanity on the west coast of North America, not just Canada. We're talking all over the Pacific Northwest. Not just the rape, torture, and trafficking of women and children, harvesting and trafficking of human organs, cult ritual killings of men, women, and children, and so on. Well, this grand jury has recommended that a common law court be convened, and sure enough, based on that, that is happening on Monday, March 30th. We're going to talk about that today, and to follow the work of the tribunal, write to itccsoffice@gmail.com. Let me bring on Deborah. Hi, Deb. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. I'm excited to be here again. Thank you.
It's really good to have you. And, you know, it's one of the reasons I love having you back on, not only because you're a good co-host, is you have lived through this from a young age, the reality of these crimes against children, the systemic crimes of churches backed by the power of the state. So you're speaking from real experience. This isn't just another fanciful theory. You're the living proof of what we're talking about. So I thank you for your courage.
Thank you. Thanks for mentioning that. It is true. It's I don't know. It is definitely part of the experience I had. I had in my lifetime, and I've gone through some different processes to get to where I am now. And I'm just such an advocate of people really being able to speak the truth, being able to focus on themselves, and really do what they need to do to work through healing, transformation, and have their voice. You know, it's such a complex process. But one of the things that definitely comes from all of that is really what you're talking about here. I'm so glad that you mentioned the new common law court. I noticed that was just announced on the 23rd, like 3 days ago. And that was just so powerful as I was reading that. And then I actually watched the YouTube announcement as well. So I'm just kind of curious. I really wanted to ask you this today. How can it help survivors? Tell me about that.
Well, it's interesting, you know, because as we know, you can't begin to tell a story until you've started some process of personal recovery. But it's hard to recover in a culture where the criminals are still in power. And you know that if you open your mouth, you know, the full power of the courts and police are going to come down on you, which has been the experience, not just Native people in Canada, but anybody who goes up against these institutionalized crimes. And so we've got to show survivors that we're not victims, that the power of speaking our truth can not only bring light to bear on a crime, but can actually start turning the tables. Because, you know, we found from experience that the common law courts we did in Europe had forced the resignation of Pope Benedict, had forced three other cardinals to resign. And we were just people bringing forward the information, the power of the truth. So that's a really important message for survivors, because people aren't going to begin that process if they think it's kind of a hopeless cause, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that is so true. So, you know, I've heard you say that before, and I get excited that, you know, that your efforts actually created those kinds of results. But I was I know it could be kind of hidden, kind of. It's going to be hidden. It's going to be downplayed. We're not even covered by typical media or mainstream or anything like that. I mean, you are certainly not going to be handed any kind of recognition or medal of anything to say, oh, gosh, you know, this is why we're stepping down, or this is why we're acting the way we are. And so this is what gets really tricky for victims or for survivors or however anybody's identifying from something of, you know, being a traumatic experience from those that are in power is it's you have to look for the breadcrumbs. You've got to look for the little clues that you can actually use to connect the dots, because the big announcement is refused. They will not do that for you. And so I appreciate the fact that you bring that up and you say, you know, the Pope stepped down, these cardinals, you know, stepped down. This was adjusted. That was created. This fell because of our efforts, because it is so easy to think that it was circumstances, something else that was in-house or whatever. So you've got to claim that. Well, you've got to claim that.
Yes, because the reality is that the way power responds to people taking initiative on their own is they will never acknowledge that it happened because of what we did, right?
Right.
Because they don't want that germ of an idea in people's minds that we, the people, can put the so-called rulers on trial. That's what the power of the common law court model is. It's saying to everybody, you, the ordinary citizen, can indict the people who rule over you. Whose power you surrender your power to by votes and taxes and all that. But the point is, they're answerable to you, the people. And that's an idea that, a revolutionary idea that no one in authority likes, you know, people to do. So the very fact that we embody that and we go ahead and do what we're doing again on March 30th, there'll be a court convening in Vancouver. It'll be the 5 judicial magistrates, 24 citizen jurors. We're going to be looking at the hard evidence of not only the human and organ trafficking in the Pacific Northwest, but how it's linked to the Chinese and the Canadian governments, how they're colluding together to do that, to terrorize Native people off their land, to make a lot of people go missing. It's part of the what I call the continuity of genocide. It's never stopped. The same people, you know, in the churches who did these crimes, they're implicated right up to their eyebrows in this stuff. And so, you know, we will get that same kind of opposition and attempt to discredit us, but that only works in our favor, because when they do that, it's really admission of powerlessness on their part and fear.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, I think you and I were talking about this a little bit ago, and what was brought up is who controls the perception. Like, when you have this authority, you know, it's like the people are playing into, and I'm going to say, you know, I'll raise my hand to being guilty of this too, because just really even shifting the perspective of saying, that's right, you know what, that I do agree to the fact that they should be and are accountable to the people. They're representing us, so our collective voice is what needs to be heard. That is certainly not the way it is, but, you know, who controls the perception here, and what are the people... What are they defining, and what are they allowing, and what are they, you know, it's almost prescribed. Here's your prescription, people. This is what you have to do, versus the people saying, no, actually, it's the other way around, you know, and just even giving this thought some more power, some more fuel, lighting that. I mean, it's not dead. There have been embers, and there have been flames, and there have even been bonfires. I mean, you know, you're certainly... You know, your group is certainly one of those that has, like, really been active in creating and stoking those fires. It's just really supporting and allowing this to show up even more and helping people connect those dots of really where does the power lie and what are the results of that. You know, so on the 30th, you're needing to have some people step forward too. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, say that again.
On the 30th, are you calling for volunteers or people to attend, or what is it that you're doing so that people can actually be part of this?
These common law courts are always public forums. They're open to the public. There's no secret record. The court record is completely open. That way we encourage people with evidence to come forward. Mm-hmm. And we also put the police on notice that they can't intervene in this because it's what they call extra jurisdictional. It means that common law can be applied anywhere in the world, It doesn't depend on statute by government to you know, make it legitimate. If the police try intervening or the government, they're obstructing justice and they can go on trial themselves. So every time we did that with the police who would show up at our church protests and that, they would always back off because they knew it's true. The problem is not the authorities. Here's the thing, Deb. The problem is not the authorities. It's the people out there we're trying to reach, because every single one of them is not thinking with their own thoughts. They're thinking with the thoughts that have been inculcated in them. That is, we have no authority. We can't do anything unless we get approval from some higher authority. And that's the problem I find when we do things like this. People do not come forward. Even when we set an example, it's like pulling teeth, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's not, I don't know that I'm even familiar with very many examples. I mean, there is one that did happen in Salt Lake City that I would really like to, you know, highlight when we...
Yeah, please talk about that.
Well, I was doing some looking into exactly what the history is with any whistleblowers or anything that's coming out with the Mormon Church. And the most recent that did get some attention that I'm aware of was what happened with Sam Young. And Sam Young was a bishop in the Mormon Church. And basically, there's a policy in the church where bishops are the ecclesiastical leaders over their congregation. And part of the policy is the bishops would need to interview youth, which are young people from the age of 12 to 17, 18. And so they're private interviews. You go into the office, there's a young child sitting with and an older man, and he has the direction from the church to interview these kids and ask them, you know, what their current worthiness status is. And one of the questions that's involved with that is, do you keep the law of chastity? That's the way it's worded in the Mormon Church, which is like, what is your sexual activity? It's basically, are you sexually active? Are you masturbating? Are you ejaculating? Are you letting people touch you? Are you touching other people? I mean, it's just, it's very invasive. And so some of these bishops who are actually interested in deeper questions that way are questioning young children about that. And so his daughter, and I, to be honest, I've had questioning like that when I was a youth in the church. I actually fielded questions like that in those private conversations with my own bishops. And so I'm like, yeah, that I grew up with this. This is very true. This did happen. And it does still happen. And so it happened to his daughter. She came back and said, yeah, I was asked these questions. I felt really uncomfortable. And he was really, it was really bothersome. So the more and more, it just became really a bigger deal. So he decided to say, hey, you know what? I think this is wrong. And I want to start a petition. And he put out a petition in October of 2017, urging the church to end the practice of these one-on-one interviews by ecclesiastical bishops and the youth. And so, because, you know, the tendency for some of them to be very sexually explicit, I mean, it was pretty widespread anyway. Not saying that every bishop did this, but enough did that he put up this petition, and people began signing this petition. Like, it got some leverage. It got some traction. And so after that, though, what ended up happening was then after that, in March, he decided what he was going to do as this was going on. He decided he was going to create a walk. They were going to do a peaceful walk. He called for people to do this walk up State Street in Salt Lake City on the Friday before the April 2018 General Conference, which was this big worldwide conference. The church holds it every April and October. So he was asking people to come and, you know, really support him in this demonstration. However, on March 26th, the church basically stole his thunder and announced changes that would allow youth to bring someone in of their choosing into any interview to negate one of his demands. And so they actually did respond. And then he countered with, well, that's great, but you know what? You've got to get rid of it altogether. This is really still very invasive. And so then that ended up going into this demonstration in July, where he did a 23-day hunger strike to really end these private interviews altogether. So it was interesting that he's still saying, you know what, I'm here, I can see this. And they did respond, but they didn't, I mean, they were still controlling the perception. So that allowed some people to, like, kind of turn a blind eye or step away. But really, that what this all ended up happening was he ended up getting excommunicated from the church. And the quote behind this was, he was excommunicated according to what the church wrote to him in a letter because of his persistent, aggressive efforts to persuade others to his point of view by repeatedly and deliberately attacking and publicly opposing the church and its leaders. Then they said, you can be reinstated if you stop undermining the church's authority. So right there in that statement, they're saying...
Hey, sounds familiar.
Right? So the opposition is, hey, look, we're authorities here, and you just got to back off. Yeah. We're not acquiescing to anything. We're just thinking that maybe you brought up some good points and you had a few people or a number of people. But the breadcrumbs are there to see that you did make a difference.
Okay, now here's the question. Yeah, they spun it, definitely, like church-governed people always do, but I'm wondering if, in your opinion, these interviews, were there a way for the church to kind of suss out kids that might be approachable, kids to be trafficked? Because that's the inner regime of child murdering institutions like these churches.
Well, so... you're asking me for my opinion, and from my experience, you're going to get this is where it's coming from. But yes, I would say yes, that is for a fleshing out. And also, there is a tendency because of some of the men that are in that authority position that I personally had experience with, and I want to stress that. My personal experience is some of the men that were in those positions were part of a deeper cult group that were very much identifying and creating reasons to bring other children into cult rituals. And so I can tell you from my own experience that that was part of the...
All right.
Just getting
Okay. Deb, we've got to hold this thought, and in the future we're going to go more into that case and things related to. We do have Ella on the line. Hello, Ella. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be back.
Yeah, it's been a while. Now, I wanted, you know, we're going to make a little jump here from talking about the Mormon Church into what you have to share with us. But for a little bit of background for folks, it was very interesting a couple of years ago when we aired a program where we first discussed the ties between the Mormon Church and the Church of Rome. Within 40 hours of that happening, this fellow Sasha Stone began attacking me personally and our work over the Internet to a degree that had never happened before. And the story we had surfaced showed how the entire top Mormon leadership had met with Pope Francis, Jorge Bergoglio, had opened a new temple in Rome, which was really unusual because the Catholic Church considers them a pagan cult. And we believe that in that Mormon church, there are the same sacrificial rituals child torturing rituals that go on with the Catholic Ninth Circle. So that's a little bit of the background, because I understand that you have information for us about the wider associations Sasha Stone has, and you're going to talk a little bit about that today. And could you also say, as you get into that, a little bit about who you are in terms of people who may not know?
Sure. Yeah. Well, in a nutshell, I'm active in the truth movement since the beginning of 2014, and I've been following your work and the work of the ITCCS since 2014, when Dutch witnesses Toos Nijenhuis and Annemarie van Blijenburg came out with their revelations about satanic ritual abuse, particularly by the Dutch royal family. And this has always been a focus point on my blog. I started the blog ellastert.nl on April 1st in 2016. And I write about a wide variety of topics, but the sexual and ritual abuse of children, where top politicians and officials and celebrities are involved, is a means to control people that are in power. And this whole power structure is interwoven with the mafia and the criminal underworld. And yeah, that sort of ties into the revelations that we found on our ongoing investigation on the ITNJ, because when they became more public about what they were going to set up, at first I was very enthusiastic about, well, I thought finally the satanic ritual and sexual abuse is going to be exposed. But from the very beginning, when they became more public, I noticed that there were things that were off, that, you know, they kept insisting on forgiveness and not prosecuting anyone. So I've always been very critical on and following their work very critically. And one of
thing, so we can explain what the ITNJ is, the International Tribunal for Natural Justice, set
right.
up apparently with a lot of money by Sasha Stone and Robert Steele. And these are the two folks that have been kind of leading the campaign to attack us and the work we're doing, just so folks know that.
Right. And the ITNJ, which is the abbreviation, that's sort of the legal arm of Humanitat, which is the umbrella organization founded by Sasha Stone. And a person who has always been closely involved with both the foundation of the ITNJ and Humanitat and other organizations and projects that Sasha Stone did was Ciro Orsini. And it's good probably to go to explain his background. He is a descendant of the Orsini bloodline. He comes from the House of Orsini. And that family is part of 13 papal bloodlines. They belong to the black nobility in Italy. They, those families control the Vatican, and they also created the mafia. They are also called the Grey Jesuits. And Ciro Orsini is related to Pepe Orsini, and he is the Grey Pope, and according to some sources, the most powerful man operating from the shadows. So that in itself made us suspicious from the beginning, but then you can't judge people from their, you know, their descendants. So we did some digging on Ciro Orsini's businesses, and we found some shocking information. The first thing we found was he owns the Orsini House in Kharkov, Ukraine, that facilitates the adult entertainment nightclub, boutique and spa under the brand name Penthouse Club, as well as Ciro's Pomodoro Pizza Restaurant. So all under one roof, under the name of Orsini House. He owns a matchmaking site, which is called Hot Russian Brides, to connect beautiful women from Eastern European countries, mainly Ukrainian, with Western European men. And we can get into that connection later, because there's a lot more to say about his connections to the Ukraine and Romania. But the most shocking thing we found was that there's evidence that Ciro founded a number of secret societies under the brand name Knights of St. Francis and Heaven Circle. And these organizations organize eyes wide shut parties. And for those of the listeners that are not familiar with the movie Eyes Wide Shut, those are Illuminati sex parties. They're related to secret societies, Freemasons, sex magic. They make references to rituals. And yeah, maybe I can go into a little bit of what they describe, which is going on, so people have an idea. On the surface
I just wanted to add too, Deb, if you at any point have any questions or things to say, feel free just to jump in and ask Ella.
Oh yeah, absolutely. This is just fantastic information. So yeah, go ahead. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Well, on the surface of it, they present this glamorized and commercialized Illuminati sex parties. They are held in multi-million dollar mansions in London, but also it's a worldwide operation. They are operating international. And to give a sort of visual impression, when the guests arrive, they get champagne served by half-nude men and women with Venetian masks. The dress code at arrival is for men a tuxedo, a cloak, and a mask, and for women a cocktail dress or lingerie, a cloak, and a mask. A buffet is served on a nude model. There are erotic performances, orgies, but also they talk about and show pictures of people in bondage, people with handcuffs. They talk about the dungeon area. They talk about the torture garden, women in cages, torture in the dungeon area. These are wordings that I picked up on based on the website and the Instagram page. Rituals with men and women in cloaks. And when you look even more critically on the imagery on the website and the Instagram page, you see MKUltra sex slave programming, master-slave relationships, references to satanic rituals, Masonic clubs, and Masonic meetings. And the logo for these clubs, Knights of St. Francis and Heaven Circle, is a triangle with the all-seeing eye. And central in that logo is an H and a C. And I found that very interesting because you see the same thing in the Jesuit logo, the Humanitat right. logo. And, I mean, obviously it refers to Heaven Circle, but I also think it refers to the Holy See. So there's all these references. And then the partner organization is called Heaven Circle. And it seems to me that it's a bit more targeted to a more mainstream audience. So the first circle is accessible to many and not as expensive. But there are inner circles within inner circles, and the higher the circle, the more exclusive, the more expensive, and the more extreme. So that in itself is a reference to the ninth circle. And, right. At the third circle, they refer to a ritual. They use this word ritual with red robes, and then it's sort of a glamorized erotic experience. But beyond the third circle, you can place an order up to £20,000. So that's roughly 23,000 euros for one night of erotic entertainment. And you go like, what wow. are they offering for that amount of money? That's outrageous. So, there you have it.
Right.
These secret societies are founded by Ciro Orsini. The companies are not officially registered on his name, but they even had placed it on the website that he's the actual founder. And so he's also involved with founding the ITNJ, and that organization states that they stand up for victims of sexual exploitation and ritual abuse. So it's sort of a conflict in interest there.
Now, tell us, Ciro Orsini and Sasha Stone are. Can you describe more of their friendship and their relationship?
Sure. They go back a really long time. They know each other for decades. Ciro Orsini was already friends with Sasha when Sasha was having a rock band. And many of Ciro Orsini's businesses are have shareholders, and the CEOs and business partners are the Coppola brothers, Antonio Coppola and Ciro Jr. Coppola. And these were also shareholders of Sasha's Stone Music Company. And they've been in touch ever since. I mean, they share the same, they go to their same events, important events, either in Bali or in London. So it's not like they lost touch and they don't see each other anymore. They're close friends. And Sasha has also been criticized in the past for his relationship with Ciro Rossini, and he had always defended him. And what also is interesting is that there's another connection there, Armando Santi, which is another business partner of Ciro Rossini, who's just as Ciro connected to a Romanian mafia guy. He is also the ambassador of Humanitas, and he was the primary presenter of the Millennium Development Goals Awards to the UN in 2009. So, in other words, the same people that operate within Ciro Rossini's businesses also operate within Sasha Stone organization. So given the enormous involvement in the sex industry and Eastern European business connections, you would wonder if Sasha would have absolutely no idea what Ciro Rossini was up to. I leave the listener to answer that question. Right.
Now, I had a question come in here by email. It said, what do you think was the purpose in the setting up of ITNJ? Was it to try to discredit ITCCS?
No, I think what happens is that they basically hijacked that whole freedom and justice movement. And I think ITCCS, the organization that you're very much involved in, became too much of a threat. And I know that you've told me in the past that they tried to infiltrate your organization. But since that didn't succeed and, you know, they tried to trash your organization through Albert Weber, and you kept just going. And, you know, then this was probably plan C, to sort of create their own organization, which they could control. They could control the witness testimonies. And they make quite an effort not to mention any names. And they leave out certain cases because it implicates maybe people in the higher up in the British society, like the Hampstead case. But basically, they just sort of hijacked that whole arena of this disclosure about sexual and satanic ritual abuse. Right. And they have bigger backing, like they have more money to spend. They have a better presentation. They can be more visible. They have backing also by organizations like the UN, which was confirmed. Yeah, the establishment, it's in their own interest, so they don't have, they're not attacked like the ITCCS. So,
well, the other thing, Ella, other thing they don't do at all is talk about prosecuting anyone. And that's been the focus, the purpose of the ITCCS from the beginning, as is happening now with this third common law court case. And that to me was, and to other people, has been very noticeable that they say, well, ITNJ says, give us your testimony, but then they never say what they're going to do with it. And there's never any consequence legally.
Actually, for me, that was such a huge red flag that I started to suspect before the first hearings took place that there was something iffy going on, because Robert David Steele was constantly repeating his mantra, everyone gets the truth, nobody goes to jail. And Sasha Stone kept saying absolution and redemption and forgiveness. And I was like, wait a minute, we're talking about people that rape, torture, kill babies and children.
And meanwhile, Stone and Steele are both saying that Kevin Annan should be locked up in prison. I guess no forgiveness for me.
No, and another thing that really stands out is that Robert David Steele is involved in a lawsuit against Jason Goodman, a journalist who did used to work for him based on leaked correspondence. And he is sued for a defamation case with two other colleagues for each for $6 million. So you have a lawsuit of $6 million claim. So basically, well, if you are a journalist and you execute freedom of speech, you can be financially destroyed. But when you rape, torture, and kill children, you get a free out of jail card. That's basically the message.
Absolutely. Do you know much about Robert Steele's CIA background? And I understand he was in El Salvador in the 80s, which is when CIA was helping to murder thousands of people during the Civil War there. Do you know anything more about him and the CIA background?
No, I didn't know that, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, quick check on the Google finds, you know, all that information is up there. But as they say, mm-hmm. is there such a thing as ex-CIA?
Right. Yeah, Thomas Williams explained this in his radio show, Truth, Honor, and Integrity, that they create these side operations so that these clandestine operations so that there's no oversight. So CIA members go on these projects, on these black projects, and they, yeah, there's no formal oversight. So, yeah. Nobody knows what happens within these, I don't know, there's a certain name for it, but within these side organizations, let's just call it that.
Deb, any comments or questions?
I do, actually. I've been listening, and it's one of those things where I just keep, from the very beginning of all of this, I just keep seeing how important it is that that you're doing, that both of you are doing exactly what you're doing, which is to help connect the dots, to help people mm-hmm. see the connections and create this outline, because it's so subversive. There are dots to connect. I mean, they are there, but not everybody knows where to look, and they don't necessarily know this name is actually the same person under this name, and this is where they showed up over here in the United States, but at the same time, they were showing up in this connection over in Europe. And like it is global. I think that's what people really need to understand, because it can get bigger than a person's mind wants to deal with, or it can just be kind of, you know, shuffled to the side. He's like, well, you know, I mean, the local authorities are going to take care of that little march over there. You know, it's really bigger than just a few little things. And yet, even with it being as big as it is, connecting those dots is so important, because we can be just as big. I mean, Kevin, you've got connections in Ireland, you've got connections in, you know, Canada, the United States, and Australia. I mean, there are connections that can be connected here. You know, like, it is, we the people do have the voice, and we can say, look, I can support you here and you can support me there. And it's just,
right. Well,
again,
Deb, you know,
I just want to be appreciative of what you guys are doing here. It's so amazing.
You had the experience, Deb, or people have told you, I think, I couldn't quite remember, this was the story of a joint ceremony between the Catholics and the Mormons in the temple.
Right.
There was a tunnel linking
right.
the Catholic Cathedral in Salt Lake City. I mean, we know it's a big criminal conspiracy involving all these different churches.
Absolutely. But, you know, like you said, there's a tunnel connecting it. It's something that people just kind of like, well, I don't see that. I didn't see that cardinal fly in. We weren't told on the news that the, you know, this Catholic Church, Mormon Church thing was going on. But it's so funny. It's like, well, yeah, but the Mormons are going to celebrate the fact, the LDS Church is going to celebrate the fact that back, you know, last March, they were going to dedicate the Rome Temple. They had 3 weeks of open house or 3 days of open house. And in the meantime, all 15 members of the top LDS leadership, you know, the prophet and his counselors and the 12 apostles and all that, they left the country for, you know, that dedication in Rome. and they did meet with the Pope. And that has historically never happened before. That all 15 have never gone anywhere before together, ever, ever, for any kind of dedication of any temple. So what is the deal? And so they were celebrating it on the news, and now it's quietly kind of disappeared. People really just didn't even, you know, really give it the weight that it did. And I looked at that and went, okay, I know exactly what's going on there.
Well, Ella, it really relates very much to what you're talking about, and please continue with more information might have relevant to any of us.
Yeah, Deborah's right. This is much bigger than people anticipate, and they're very well organized, and they have a lot of money to back up, and there's masters in operating in the shadow that manipulate all this and that set out the agenda. And one other thing that is interesting to point out is the symbolism of the ITNJ, because the ITNJ is the legal brand of Humanitas. That's the umbrella organization, and the Humanitas logo shows a remarkable resemblance with the Jesuit logo, with a similar black sun and an H in the middle, and that same sun is used in the ITNJ emblem. But they also have an ITNJ logo, which has a pine cone and an infinity sign. And the pine cone is a reference to the pineal gland and enlightenment. And I remembered that there was a large pine cone statue on a square in Vatican City, and it's called Cortia della Pigna, the courtyard of the pine cone. And they use that symbol because the Catholic Church hijacked spirituality and enlightenment. They don't encourage it, but they actually hijacked it by replacing it with a false religion or a manipulated story at least. And when you look for images of this statue, you see two opposing peacocks on either side of the pine cone. And it has a similar configuration on the ITNJ committee website. So I started to look up the meaning of the symbolism of the peacock. And it has been a symbol of nobility and especially kingship for centuries. And also was seen as a protector of the royals. And the peacock feather symbolized the all-seeing knowledge. And a single feather is symbolizing the all-seeing eye. So again, I mean, you know, when you look at all these symbols, you see the same sort of references made to, yeah, these big themes that are sort of covering all these organizations to have this oversight.
Right.
And maybe it's also good to point out a few things about the connections with the mafia in Romania and Ukraine, because that sort of ties into the to human trafficking in general. So when we were digging on Ciro Sini, we found some links with the mafia. First of all, he's linked to the mobster Franco Nicoletti, and he was the manager at the first Ciro's restaurant in Los Angeles. He was arrested for money laundering, and that restaurant was rumored to be the meeting place of the Cosa Nostra chiefs, and Cosa Nostra is one of the mafia groups. And another manager of a Ciro Pomodoro restaurant in London was murdered, and that murder was never resolved, which could also indicate involvement of the mafia. It's always a bit suspicious when that's going on. Then Ciro is also connected to Nicu Guerra, and he is known as the godfather for Romania. And Nicu Guerra was once investigated by prosecutors in Romania for trafficking in cocaine. And they both organize events that are visited by celebrities, which is the clientele for their clubs, because they both have nightclubs and they organize sex events. So they were all both suspected of links with the Italian mafia. And then another character also is named in similar articles about these cases, and that's Sapu Narescu. He's associated with money laundering and trafficking in women, and his Russian business partners established clubs in Miami, Florida, where prostitutes from former Soviet Union countries work. So all in all, you have a network of drugs, money laundering, blackmail, prostitutes, and human trafficking of Eastern European women. And we found countless Romanian publications where the name Ciro Orsini keeps popping up in this context. And
it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Ella, I remember in Anna Maria von Bleienberg's testimony, she described how her husband was a member of what she called the Octopus or Drangheta, mm-hmm. which was one of the terms right. for the European mafia, and how Drangheta was providing children for these human hunting parties in Belgium and the Netherlands. And so that's another link between the Ninth Circle, the Vatican, the organized crime, the kind of things you're describing.
Well, and I also remember that these children typically come from Romania. That's Romania, all the poor countries in Europe, like Portugal and Romania and other Eastern European countries, those are the most vulnerable places where children get lost that are used for these pedophile rings and Ninth Circle rituals. And particularly Ukraine is named by the FBI and another organization that deals with immigration as a problematic country in regards to human trafficking, not just child trafficking, but human trafficking in general. But I know that child trafficking also took place through the embassy in New York and Washington, D.C., and it was the Ukrainian embassy. And Ukraine seems to be a mecca for deep state operations. I mean, we now have the impeachment procedure against Trump, which ties into secret deals that Joe Biden's son made in Ukraine and Nancy Pelosi's son. And it also is connected to the BlackBerry scandal, where American politicians were blackmailed through the BlackBerries by the Owen brothers, which is connected to Hillary Clinton and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And that server where all the blackmail data is stored is believed to be in Ukraine. So Ukraine keeps popping up as a country where a lot of things can happen, and there's apparently not a lot of oversight and a lot of bribery going on.
Here's the thing, Ella. You know, one of the things we find all the time is, as soon as you start scratching beneath the surface, you see how vast this network is, how it involves all the political parties. It involves all the elites, and it can create an impression among people that it's too big to fight. What's your opinion on that in terms of presenting this kind of evidence in a criminal court? Or how do you see getting this out most effectively, this information?
Well, I think that your organization has demonstrated that when you put out the truth, then it falls apart. I mean, these kind of operations can only operate based on fear, intimidation, blackmail, bribery, and lies, and so that everybody just that is in the know shuts up. And what you said in the beginning, that they're not used to be called out, and this is exactly what we need to do. But doing this investigation, I also realized that we shouldn't underestimate the necessity for information and, you know, communicating more clearly how this whole thing works, because even people within the freedom movement, within the spiritual movement, that talk about sovereignty and want drastic change from the current system, they can also be misled, because even those organizations can be infiltrated and are right. often manipulated by the same power yep. structure.
Oh, I think that's
Ella, we've only got 3 minutes left. Sorry, 3 minutes left here. I want to give each of you a chance to sign off. But Ella, tell us first if there's websites or information people can go to. We definitely are going to have you back soon.
Okay, well, thank you. My website is ellaster.nl. I mainly write in Dutch, but if you're really interested in these topics, then Google Translate will help. And I think another thing that we can maybe talk about another time, but it's something that is very important, is the connection with Agenda 21, because that's another thing that ties everything together. So maybe that's for next time.
We can definitely get into that in discussion of the upcoming common law court case in March 30th in Vancouver, because that's going to be an item high on the agenda. Ella, mm-hmm. I thank you for your invaluable information, and we're going to have you back soon. Deb, any final words?
I would really want to thank her for coming on and for the work that she's doing, and just encourage people to know that they can do something about it, but it's really important to just get involved, really trust the fact that they can make a difference, and start connecting dots and be part of something that their heart is kind of guiding them towards, because it's really important for these voices to get together and have us all just really know that we can do something to change the perception of who really is in power here.
Right. Thank you, Deb.
Right.
Deb Golding,
thank you very much.
Ellaster, thank you for being with us today. And final reminder to folks, please tune in next week, because on the show we're going to be having more updates about the upcoming common law court, and a scheduled meeting, public information meeting on the court, is planned in Vancouver on Saturday, February the 8th. So we'll have more information on that, or you can write to republicofcanada@gmail.com, murderbydecree.com. Thank you all. Until next week, stay strong, stay clear. I thank you.